The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter at Bastards_Boston. I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, and Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. Jeremy, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
I'm surviving. I'm looking forward to these hot takes, and you can find me at JTShill20 on Twitter.
Flawless. Terrence, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you on Twitter?
Oh, I am. I just cracked my neck there. Splendid. And I can be found at CushmanMLB, Terry Talks Sox on Facebook, Terry Talks Sox on TikTok. Find our in-print content at our Substack blog.
Excellent. So that being said, and introductions now over, we have a couple of hot takes that we'd like to bring to all of your attention. So going first, we're going to let Jeremy talk to his online bestie. Jeremy, why don't you go first?
So for those of you that don't know, my online best friend is Johnny Fontaine, which is at JohnnyFontaine1, a perpetual hider behind his avatar. He refuses to show himself. And he tweets, Alex Cora absolutely deserves his share of the blame for the last three horrible Septembers. You can't crow about how he got them to overachieve in the first half and then hold him blameless for the second half. And there was also some other tweets kind of along the same way that are being rolled into Johnny's tweet. And Johnny was tweeting me Tuesday, Wednesday on this. And so for Johnny, this is going to be a little bit of a retread. I am dumbfounded by the anti-Cora people, because no one can say that the front office or ownership has supported the big league club. No one. Heim, way too much value on the minors, stacking talent to the detriment of the big league club. At the same time, ownership didn't spend on anybody not named Devers. Then you bring in Breslow, and it really hasn't been functionally different in any sense of the word. Everything's a bargain deal. O'Neill, 1 year, small money. Giolito, you know, you can say what you want about the injury. He was not a top of the market guy. They refused to spend. Then you get to the deadline and it's all the same BS. It's what's a bargain? What costs as little dollars, as little prospects to, you know, quote unquote, you know, supplement the big league club? When you don't support the big league club with talent, especially as there are clear indicators that there's issues, this is what you get. You run out of resources. Cutter Crawford, Houck, to name two that I know for a fact are past their previous high in innings, are well beyond it. Instead of going to get a supplement, get Paxton, you need a lefty, but go get somebody else. We don't have an ace. Go get an ace. When you run out of resources, there's only so much you can do from an in-game managerial perspective. And the people that bag on Cora, like Johnny, seemingly refuse to accept that that's what's taking place with the front office. And maybe Johnny's just as, you know, anti-Breslow, anti-John Henry. I don't hear it, not in the last 10 days. It's just all about Cora. Like, it's Cora's fault that Duran didn't hit. It's Cora's fault that Abreu hasn't been the same player. Yoshida's not hitting. Cassis has been a dumpster fire. They have Valdez playing second. Is it Cora's fault? Emmanuel Valdez is our everyday second baseman right now? I don't think it is, Johnny. And that's not to say that the balance of the Jansen is absolutely not Cora's fault. Jansen did not pull the trigger. Cora did not pull the trigger to go get Jansen as our right-handed at-bat at the deadline. So it just baffles me, right? Like, everyone's upset about Cora. Well, do you blame Cora for pulling Criswell when he's not really a big league arm? Because he's not Cora's fault. That's our organizational pitching depth. That's Breslow's fault and an extension of Heim's fault. So, look, I am a Cora guy. I've been a Cora guy for years. I'm not defending anything in the past. I'm just looking at what's in front of me. He's been given extremely limited resources. I think he's gotten the most out of the talent. He has spearheaded Duran's development, Rafaela's development, Wong's development. Devers has thrived under him. You know, I don't get it. I don't get Johnny's perspective. And Johnny, I know you're going to tweet me and I look forward to it. But when you continually come back at me and other things, I'm just going to keep saying the other thing, the same thing over and over and over again. If you don't support the big league club, when you run out of resources, in-game management can only do so much. And you're about to see that in the Baltimore and Yankee series.
Terrence?
I also disagree with Johnny, but I will say this. There's been some prominent Twitter accounts that seem to be turning on Alex Cora. And accounts that would surprise me because they typically lean mostly homer. I'm not a Cora guy, but I'm not willing to put the failure of this season or the last couple on him. He's had trash to work with, as Jeremy was pointing out. Just absolute trash. Take another manager in MLB. Put David Ross in the management spot for this season. Where do we finish? Where's our record right now? How many games under 500 are we? We're one game above 500 right now because of Alex Cora's leadership. And the one thing that Cora doesn't get any credit for, you don't really see it this season especially. Jarren Duran, massive steps under Alex Cora's guidance. Rafaela was better than I thought he would be this year. I thought Rafaela would at least one time end up back in Worcester to figure it out. And he hasn't really had a long, painful slump yet. And Rafaela's been good. I think Cora could have done a better job with Abreu, trying to get him a little bit more effective against lefties, but it's still been an overwhelmingly productive season for Abreu. He's still at least in the conversation for Rookie of the Year. He does very well with young talent, and John Farrell, the big knock on him was exactly that. He always favored the veterans. Always. So I think it would be much worse right now. And Breslow had to extend him. I think the biggest reason why Breslow extended him, aside from, you know, public pressure, is he knows that Cora has bailed him out several times over throughout the year. So I can't blame it on Alex Cora. Now, if you told me right now that, you know, Breslow wasn't coming back, I probably would lean strongly towards another voice if we were getting a well-respected executive in here who was going to have the clout to to pull in, you know, a really nice candidate for manager. I don't know who that would be. If you go back to Dombrowski, Cora was a sexy name at the time, and that's who Dombrowski wanted, and that's who got hired. But if you're telling me right now, Breslow's definitely coming back, and I'm fairly certain he will. I don't think there's any other guy that's going to get more out of his bad decisions than Alex Cora.
Yeah, 100%. And to your last point, I 100% agree with you. I don't think so. I know I'm not a huge Alex Cora guy per se. You know, he's the guy that we have right now. We did extend him. He's going to be here for the next 3 years. But I wasn't really happy about the whole scandal. That kind of, you know, did not rub me the right way. And understandably so, it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. That being said, you can only blame the manager for so much if things are not going the right way. You can't blame a manager for certain injuries. And you certainly can't blame a manager if players are getting DFA'd or we're deciding to add players that are 44 years old or 43 years old. I forget how old Rich Hill was. But we've had, in the last 3 years, we had a pretty much 500 September, which was rough. And then last year, I think we were like 12 and 18 or 13 and 17, something like that, where we lost five or six, I'm assuming five or six games more than we won. So yeah, that hurt. But even if September was brutal, do you think the Boston Red Sox were going to go far into the playoffs in 2023? Do you think they had a formidable team? I don't really think it's. I think a little bit of blame, maybe some roster mismanagement. Sure, I'd say a small share, like a really small sliver of a share, because you can't blame Alex Cora for certain injuries for even happening before the season started. So I know you're talking about September's being like what you really want to harp on and whatnot. We have overachieved the first half of the year. We had players way overperform, players that we never even thought were going to be on this team perform. The David Hamiltons, you know, to some degree, you know, you could say Dom Smith maybe a little bit. A huge upgrade for Jaren Duran, who's been out of this planet good. O'Neill also doing pretty well. I mean, I don't think anyone thought he was going to hit more than 20 home runs in Boston. I was hoping he was going to be like a 30-80, 30-90 guy. So it looks like I'm going to get the 30 part right, but not the, you know, the 90. I'm going to be far short of that one, unless he just has like a record-breaking last couple weeks, which that ain't happening. I would say a small share, but I don't think it would be fair to say a huge share, you know, to be fully transparent here. It is what it is, Johnny. I mean, things haven't been great this year. We've performed a lot better than a lot of people thought we were going to perform. A lot of the Bastards predicted, you know, sub 75 wins for the season. And we're there right now. So Jason's the next one on the list. I believe he had 73 for his pick. And I think I had 72. Terry might have been 71. Yeah, Terry, go ahead.
That's correct. Only Micah was north of... He had 76, so he's the only one above 75. This sums it all up for me. Let's go back to opening day. We're pissed off. We didn't get any of our pitching targets. Giolito had been on the injured list, had already had his Tommy John before then. So we're mad about Breslow's performance this winter. Now, if you could look into the future on opening day, with a crystal ball or whatever, and I told you James Paxton, who is going to be completely cooked, who will have lost 5 or 6 miles an hour off his fastball, would be your trade deadline acquisition plus Rich Hill, who nobody wanted last winter. That's why he didn't sign with the team. Those would be your deadline moves. Like, how could you put it on Alex Cora? Like, that's like the ultimate indictment to me.
Unless you know, Johnny Fontaine knows something that the rest of the world doesn't know. And Alex Cora is the one that's moonlighting as the president of baseball operations. They said we were going to get a starter, a reliever, and a bat. The starter and the reliever and the bat that we got were not the ones that we thought we were going to get. Although I'm not going to lie, probably the ones we should have expected, because this team has been cheaper than a, you know, $3 bill. It's been pathetic. And, Jeremy.
Charlie, here's my final comment. Let's not be the type of fan that just blames the manager. Let's look at the circumstances and the facts that go into the story of the season. And if you do that, you can't blame Cora for the decline after the All-Star break. You can't. He is not supported. He's part of the on-field product. When you don't support the on-field product, you don't support the manager that governs the game time decisions. It's that simple. So let's not just default to it's the coach's fault. This is professional sports. There's scouting, there's development, there's ownership, there's general managing. The guy in the clubhouse only supports players developing at the big league level, the big league level. So Duran, Rafaela, all those guys are excelling. Let's not just blame the manager, because that's the easy thing to do. Let's not do it, please.
Another
Anything
thing
you want
to, yeah, another yeah. thing kind of as I'm sitting up in my seat comes to mind. Look at the Seattle Mariners. They, they last got into the postseason in 2022. We were last in it the year before that. But look at the preseason expectations. I mean, they had George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, Luis Castillo. They had a stud rotation, arguably on paper, the best rotation in the American League. They're sitting right now one win above us, and they fired their manager. Now, granted, they had the same scuffling, you know, the same underachieving staff, and their manager got fired. But the difference between Scott Servais and Alex Cora was he had the pieces on his team to succeed. He had a talented team that just underachieved. So, and Cora's just one win under them with a lot less to work with. And, but if you want to put the shoe on the other foot, if that was Alex Cora on that team with the same underachieving, I'd say, yeah, fire him, because he did have the pieces, but he doesn't in Boston.
I don't think there's anything more to add. So thank you, Johnny. And I'm sure you'll chirp us soon, and we'll look forward to chatting, or you can chat Jeremy and then we'll hear about it. This next hot take is coming from one of our former co-hosts, Ballpark Buzz, Micah. Always good to see your name. Richard Fitz should be in the rotation through the end of the season. So at Ballpark Buzz, Micah, thank you. Yeah, man, why not? What's the worst that could happen? I see no problem with having Richard Fitz into the in the rotation. He had a really exciting first game, played some nice defense, had a silly strikeout, which is just that slider was crazy. Am I expecting him to blow teams away? No, but if he didn't pitch in this series, it would have been really, really cool. You know, actually, excuse me, he could line up to face the Yankees, if I'm not mistaken. He'll be in that potential series, correct? Because we got Baltimore for three, he'll pitch probably game two or three of that series. That could actually be really, really interesting. I'm really excited to see how Richard Fitz does against Verdugo, and maybe Weiser comes in also just to make it real adorable. I absolutely love this. You know, I mean, we've had so much sorrow this year, and even if he doesn't do great, You know, just remember what happened with Brian Baio when he was a Boston Red Sox in his first year. It was ugly. It was sinful. It was terrible. He didn't have the support, and it was questionable that they were going to, you know, really jeopardize his vote of confidence that he had in himself. But you know what? Where not much has gone right, I think that this could potentially be one of the, you know, bright things in 2024 to wrap out the year. Terry, why don't you go next?
I would absolutely pitch Richard Fitz in place of Criswell. Absolutely. The lineup's a little wonky, though, or the rotation, because you're going to have Hauk going for sure on Friday. So that would be the fifth day for Fitz on normal rest. So I'd like to see them push him back, either bump him up to Thursday to get Fitz in there, and then everybody else would have their normal start. But one way or the other, I mean, you may as well see what you have with him. And I don't think he's a finished product. Like I said in the last show, he's really just a two-pitch guy. It would scare me if he pitched very well and then the Red Sox said, absolutely, I think he's going to be in the starting five next year. That's scary to me because it's too short of a sample size to gamble on him in a spot like that. This year will be 5 out of 6 not making the postseason. Next year, I mean, I think we can all agree Hauk probably won't be as dominant. He'll be good, but he won't have the run that he had this year. So there's going to be some regression there. There'll probably be some regression with Crawford as well to some degree. So I don't want to have a rotation that's shaky again. I want to go into next season with a rotation that I can say we're winning 90. This is a rotation that's getting us to 90 wins or better. And, you know, so Fitz kind of scares me in that regard. But he did play the White Sox. That was a cupcake debut. It couldn't have been scripted any better. You couldn't have put him in there against a softer team. Unless he happened to be facing his own team, the Red Sox. That would be a pretty soft opponent. But yeah, I'd love to see how he looks against the Yankees. And, you know, Breslow would like to pound his chest and say, ha ha, my guy just shut you down. You guys could have had him in your rotation this year. So we'll see.
So I agree there's no reason not to give him opportunity moving forward, okay? But it's not for purpose of evaluating the starting rotation in 2025. It's for evaluating the organizational depth at the position, because as of right now, we have none. So even if he's in Worcester and it's May 15th and someone goes down, at least you have some information that you have someone in the system that can help, right? Like, we all agree we need an ace. We need a left-handed starter and replace Pivetta. And in a perfect world, you're going to go into next season with those things, but it never goes to plan. So someone goes down, hey, last September, Fitz had 3 starts, a 3.80 ERA. We can rely on him in a spot and then send him back to Worcester. Like, there's value in that. Good clubs have that. And so that's what I'm looking for. I do not want him as a starter in our 2025 rotation. That's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for some information that we have depth at the position moving forward throughout the system. And so for that reason, I'd probably put him in the rotation through the balance of the year.
Ideally, he would take the Criswell slot for next year,
which on a playoff team means he's in Worcester. Criswell's not a big league player, right?
Yeah, well,
we all agreed on that in the recap show.
I'm not looking at the postseason. That's just too far away. But Criswell's been great when guys have gotten hurt. He's been a good guy to turn to, and he's given us a shot to win every time out. That's how I'd like to see Fitz utilized next year. I don't want him to have a permanent slot right out of spring training. Now, if he works his way into the rotation by next August or September because somebody's gotten hurt, then yeah, go ahead. Give him the opportunity. Let him ride it out. But there still is some more development to be had with him, and I don't think it's all going to happen this winter and through spring training.
It's going to be something to look forward to, because if he ends up lighting it up, it's going to be really hard not to, you know, put him in the rotation. You did bring up something earlier, Terry, that the two pitch approach, you can't live on two. You need to have a third minimum. So he's going to have to develop something, and who knows, maybe he'll do the Ryan Brazier experience and develop like a nasty cutter. Who knows, you know, time will tell, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that something really, really good works out for him. Anything else we want to add on that one? Let's move to you, Jeremy. Oh, no, excuse me. Terry.
Yeah, I've already went, Charlie.
Yep, Terry.
Mine comes from Arlene Cohen. Where is she from? Orlando, Florida. Everybody lives near Jeremy on the Hot Takes episode. She's also got the same birthday month as me, by the way. She says the Diamondbacks are winning the World Series this year. Now, I don't have their recent win-loss record up in front of me, but their rotation is not trending very well. Brandon Pfaadt has had a terrible year. Merrill Kelly has, just in the last month, an ERA near 6. Eduardo Rodriguez has an ERA over 6. Jordan Montgomery is just, I don't even know what planet he's pitching on. He's been terrible all year, hasn't figured it out. He's been in the bullpen, can't seem to get that squared away. The two guys that are pitching well for them, Zach Galen and Ryan Nelson, maybe these guys get it back before the playoffs start. Brandon Pfaadt did have a terrible year last year, but was money in the postseason, so maybe if you can get him or Rodriguez back pitching well, maybe go on a run. But I don't know. There's other teams right now that probably make a little bit more sense. The one team to look out for, same division as the Diamondbacks, San Diego Padres. That's a team that's quietly built the momentum, and that's what it's all about by the time you get to September. Who's hot? Or October, rather. So I wouldn't put my money on the Diamondbacks on September 8th. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, she could be right, but the issue that they're facing is that they hold the second wild card by a game and a half, and Atlanta and the Mets are virtually tied for the third spot. I don't think the Cubs are a real threat. But there's no guarantee they're going to make the playoffs. So it's possible, and last year showed that they have it in them, and they have all the talent in the world. But they're, you know, I don't know, to me, and the Dodgers are stacked. I don't think they're going to win it. It's more of just a hunch. Don't ask me for like a deep dive on the analysis side of it. But to me, Philly's the best team in the West, in the NL. And I wouldn't put any significant wager on the Diamondbacks coming out of the NL. I just wouldn't.
Yeah. So Arlene, DC5997, Arlene, no. Unfortunately, they've got two teams, and Jeremy mentioned one, the other being the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they're starting to come back with a vengeance, and everything seems to be going right for them. They don't, you know, it doesn't seem to matter. Every single day, there's a different Dodger going off. Like this past Monday, Freddie Freeman, 2 homers, 5 RBIs. Yes, Terry, your guy, your first baseman in fantasy. Shohei Ohtani just hit a 450-foot moonshot today, and now he's at 46-46. So he's 4 homers and 4 stolen bases away from becoming the first 50-50 guy in Major League Baseball history. He's got 3 weeks to do it. It's going to happen. Not a shock. Granted, the bases are a little bit bigger, so it's a little bit easier to steal bags. That aside, he is the most exciting player in baseball right now. I mean, when he's able to pitch again, it's going to be scary. It's going to be literally scary. But I can't do it. I can't say that the Diamondbacks are more lethal than the Phillies or the Dodgers. I just can't do it. Those are the two best teams in baseball. The Brewers are probably in there too. Let me see here.
82
yeah,
wins.
So, yeah, they're 82. Yeah, I wasn't sure how high they were. They're tied with the Yankees, who are leading the American League. The Diamondbacks are 6.5 games away from being that top team. It would take an act of God for the Dodgers and Phillies to completely fall apart and have the Diamondbacks be that top spot. It's not realistic. I picked the Dodgers to win the World Series this year because, Shohei Ohtani's on that team. Mookie Betts is on that team. Freddie Freeman's on that team. Will Smith is on that team, although he has kind of fallen off quite a bit. And Teoscar Hernandez is there. That doesn't include, your pitching. And while it's not pretty right now, once everyone's healthy again and, ready in 3 weeks, that's the last team I want to face. I have no interest in facing them at all. Nor should any other team. Anything else you guys want to add right there to that right now?
Conspiracy theory.
There we go. This should be fun. Go ahead, Terry.
If Shohei's at 49 stolen bases or 49 home runs, the other team's going to let him get it. They're just going to make it happen. Remember that run Pujols had the year before last? Just went nuts. He needed those home runs. And for no reason whatsoever in the last 5 weeks, the dude just starts teeing off, hitting bomb after bomb. That's an example. Remember the meatball that Adam Wainwright threw to Derek Jeter in his final All-Star game? And Wainwright kind of admits to it, but then had to walk it back a day or two later. I don't know. I think they're going to make damn sure that Shohei is the first 50-50 guy. And I'm not rooting against it. I like Shohei. So it is what it is. But they'll make sure it happens. You're on mute, Charlie.
I don't know if I really truly believe that they're going to just groove it for him. I really don't think you need to groove it for Shohei. He seems to do quite a fine job without the help. And the last thing that somebody like, Shohei would want is, yeah, you got to 50-50 because they groove pitches and you had that scandal earlier this year. So he's been an altar boy all season long. The only thing that Mike's have caught him saying is the F word one time when he vehemently disagreed with an umpire's call on a strike three looking. The guy's been an altar boy.
Did he get ejected?
No.
Really?
He did not. Nope.
See, nobody dings him up.
Nope. He starts walking away and he's going, nope, 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 bleep, nope. And that's all he says. That's it. And he's walking to the dugout. Doesn't turn, doesn't say anything, doesn't show up the umpires, unlike, Paul Skeens a couple days ago. That was actually kind of exciting. The umpire behind the plate wanted to feel important and special. And he and is it Schilt? Is that the manager for the Pirates? Might be
Padres, you mean?
No, sorry. Who's the manager for the Pirates?
Oh, some nobody. I forget his name.
So he was saying, no, I'm talking to you. Like, you're talking to pitcher. No, I'm talking to you. But anywho, no, I don't know. The conspiracy theory, I'm not going to buy that one. Jeremy, anything you want to add to that?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll be really brief, Terry. For me, it's more of a big league pitcher not wanting to walk a guy in a milestone and look like a coward. In that spot, they're going to challenge the guy and risk being the guy that gives up the home run versus having to look teammates in the eye and say, I just didn't want to be the guy. I think that there's a competitive thing there.
Just to bolster my suspicions here, the Dodgers end the year in Colorado. So it's going to be a team that's playing for nothing. The altitude is favorable, obviously. So I don't know. I just think they'll make sure it happens.
We'll see. I'm actually 100% with Jeremy. I don't think any pitcher wants to look like a you-know-what because he decided to, you know, gift him something. And for what? Like, you want to be a part of that? You want to be a part of that history? I don't think so.
You don't think league officials could even, like, get involved? Like, listen, we need this.
No, this isn't the NBA. You know, this isn't, you know, one of those leagues that's completely fixed. I'm not going to get all behind right. It. That's too far of a stretch for me.
Fair enough.
Yep. Anything you just want to add? That will do it for the Bastards. Everyone have a great evening. Take care.